Odyssey Sports Station. Now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis' biggest columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. No, you ain't. He ain't writing nothing. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interview.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I'm not getting no interview. I'm good.
On 92.9 FM ESPN.
Gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker. So let me first apologize to the shots and the ties for your makeup. Cause I make you ugly. As soon as it drops, we're on a rampage. Bubbles popping up before you know it. There's rubble in dust, cause we'll be pushing it up. Somebody say, you
coming up in the next segment. And after that, we got Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. So we'll talk to them about the NBA Game 5 tonight. Jeffrey, do the Mavs have a chance?
I'm going to say it ends in 5.
I think it seems likely, right? But we have the opportunity to talk. We'll talk mostly basketball in those two segments, but not as much in the open because we have Dan and Chris Harrington. Two things I learned today, though, Jeffrey.
Let's hear it.
One is, I've been all wrong about the NBA draft. It's not Thursday and Friday. It's Wednesday and Thursday. Do you know that?
So it's, I did not. Yeah. Because it's always been a Thursday.
Look it up. Yeah. Look it up. I think it's Wednesday and Thursday.
I'm not arguing with you.
So, let's see. But then the other thing is, if Game 5 ends tonight, there is a new rule that says that current teams can start negotiating with their players now. Normally, you know, you have to wait to whatever, the free agents period, legal tampering,
whatever, the,
whatever the heck that stuff is called. But now, so for example, you've got Donovan Mitchell, right?
Yep.
He could sign a new deal. You got Pascal Siakam.
Sure.
He could sign a new deal. You've got Klay Thompson. He could sign it, like, whatever. Like, there's a bunch who significant players. So we are going to, whenever this thing does come to an end, and I think we both feel it'll be tonight. I hope it's not. I like the excitement. I'd like a little tension. I'd like to see how the Celtics react, you know, when they're put in a position Roy was in yesterday.
No, I think that's 100% true. Yeah. I mean, if it's one of those things where if I'm a Boston fan, I'm not worried. But if I were to lose tonight,
at some point,
then you all of a sudden you're like, oh,
starts
boy.
To creep in there. So it starts to creep in there.
You missed the first short putt?
Hey, exactly right. We'll get to that. We will talk to Dan Devine and we'll talk to Chris Harrington. And that's mostly when we will talk about the NBA. We have two segments devoted to that. There's also, by the way, a new mock draft out at The Athletic.
By the way, I did confirm. You are correct. It's Wednesday and Thursday. That's news to me as well.
To, yeah.
Thank you.
There you go. That's
what you're here for.
Some of you may already know that, but it's always on a Thursday night.
Yes.
It's not on Thursday night. It was a Wednesday night. So it's Wednesday and Thursday. A new mock draft in The Athletic. Kind of surprising who they have dropping to the Grizzlies in this new draft, mock draft in The Athletic. So we will talk about that. I did want to start just briefly by saying that for Memphians yesterday, you had Pat Halloran, who was recognized at the Tony Awards. Pat Halloran, producer, a Broadway producer, and of course he was behind the revitalization of the Orpheum Theater, passed away this year. And so he was remembered at the Tony Awards last night on TV. And then we had Gabrielle Rose, who at the age of 46,
Gabriella, correct?
Gabrielle Rose, Gabby Rose, whatever you want to call her. Gabrielle, Gabrielle Rose. She age 46. She was, and I had written a column about this about a month ago. I talked to her, and it's just kind of an extraordinary story. Hey, you just look at the people who are competing at the Olympic trials, and as the sports editor pointed out, David Boyd, the sports editor at the Daily Memphian, pointed out to me, you look at the years of birth, right? There's the name, hometown, whatever.
Right.
And they're all 2002, 2004, 2001, 2000, whatever. And then you get to Gabrielle, and it's 1977.
Which one of these doesn't belong?
She was the Tennessee Scholar Athlete of the Year in 1995.
Mm-hmm.
I have been here. I've like had a whole career in Memphis. I've been here for decades and decades now. She was the Scholar Athlete of the Year before I arrived in Memphis. I came in 96. Her last Olympics the last Olympic trials was 2004, I think. And since then, there's been Olympics in 2008 and 2012 and 2016 and 2020. And she's been... She actually went to the Olympics in Brazil. But what happened was in her last Olympic trial, she had extended a career for 4 years, hoping to make the team, I guess, and win a... She had swum in 96 for Brazil, and then she swam for the U.S. in 2000, but didn't medal. This time, she wanted to make the U.S. team and medal. And she instead came down with mono during the
trials,
right before the trials, and she didn't make the team, and she felt like a failure, and she put swimming behind her, and she went to business school and got married and had a kid and got divorced. Like, life happens, and this is a very Memphis story because her dad, obviously Mike Rose, who was a massive supporter of the University of Memphis, he encouraged her to go back to the Olympics in Brazil and, like, you know, re-embrace your Olympian self, who she was sort of felt embarrassed and humiliated and want to put that part of, she felt like a failure. And it's amazing, two-time Olympian, feels like a failure, but she felt like a failure. And, but then... When he made it as one of the last projects of his life, as he was diagnosed with cancer, to have a new Olympic swimming pool at the University of Memphis, he put her in charge, knowing that he was reaching the end. And in order to make that project a reality, she said she had to re-embrace the identity as an Olympian. I had to be proud of myself. I had to be proud of myself and hold my, and so that project for that pool, which opened a year ago in Memphis, which went through incredible political struggle to get built, and she was swimming masters events, whatever, against, you know, other 45-year-olds, but, she said that was, I guess, last April, maybe, that the pool opened. And I asked her, if I had told you were going to be at the Olympic trials a year, she said, I would have laughed. But she made it a goal. And at 46, she qualified, the oldest ever to qualify for the Olympic trials. And then she won her preliminary heat, swam the fastest she has ever swum. Faster than the 21-year-old version of herself. Faster than the 24-year-old version of herself. At 46, faster than she ever has swum before. And made it to the finals. Did not then qualify. Made it to the semifinals. Did not qualify to move forward. She does have another event. That was the 100-meter breaststroke coming up on Wednesday. The preliminaries for the 200-meter breaststroke. And... Again, mind you, it is not anticipated that she will be swimming for the United States in Paris. But it's really extraordinary what she was has done, and it was sort of all over social media yesterday, her story, which folks in Memphis, sort of who know the Rose family, and folks who read the Daily Memphian have been aware of it. But it's a great inspirational story. And Jeffrey, I think for you, there's hope. You know, you can still be your best self.
Yes.
I don't know, what do you want to, you know, think about the best version of yourself, most athletically, athletic. When were you at your athletic peak?
I peaked in eighth grade because I hit puberty before everyone else. So I was like, bigger. Like,
imagine that.
Bigger, all things considered.
Imagine the eighth grade version of yourself. Uh-huh. You can be that again.
Yes.
You can, not only that, you can be better than that, Jeffrey.
Yes.
And all you got to do is be inspired by what we saw last night. So two nice little Memphis stories unfolded yesterday. But then we also had a U.S. Open unfolding yesterday, and it was either epic or magnificent or tragic or whatever you want to say. I ask you, Jeffrey, you are a longtime Rory guy. Is this his Greg Norman moment? Is this now what he will be known for?
I mean, it also depends on how does the story go. Part of the reason why Norman is remembered as a choker is because he didn't ever, like, conquer the mountain. But other guys have been known as chokers and gotten over it. Like, Phil. I mean, Phil, 06 Wingfoot. I mean, we're talking about, you know, very, very similar situations. Dustin Johnson, 3 putts in 2015 at Chambers Bay and then comes back, wins the next year. Adam Scott bleeds away a British Open.
There are certainly people who have choked away big tournaments before.
Yeah.
More high profile than Phil, but more high profile certainly than Adam Scott, right?
For sure.
And it comes after a 10-year drought.
Yes.
Which accelerates everything. So this is not just pick your average golfer choking away, you know, two putts inside 4 feet in the last 3 holes. Average golfer does it. That's something. But when Rory does it,
yes.
A, given his stature to begin with, and then B, given the drought, it could very well, if he does not win another major, this is what he will be remembered by more than anything else.
Yeah, because it'll also be like, well, what if he would have made those? Would that have led to another? Would that have led to another run? Would he have, like, it? To me, it's all about, is he remembered for this? It means what happens next. Is this the event that breaks him?
I should mention that, of course, there was a winner. Bryson DeChambeau won. We'll talk about him in a moment. But this is one of these deals where, Bryson was very clearly a massive part of the story, and his sort of rehabilitation in the public eye is the way he has embraced the fans and the shot that he hit out of the bunker, like that was
absolutely
all huge. But it feels like today the focus is on Rory more than the focus is on the loser more than the winner. And so I want to talk about the loser first. Do you feel bad for him? Do you feel then of course he declines to talk to the media and stomps off.
Yep.
Do you feel, are you critical of him for the way he handled it afterwards? How are you, as a longtime Rory guy, how are you feeling about this?
I mean, obviously the first person I feel the worst for is obviously me. You know,
that seems
this
fair.
I don't think people have realized like how much this has sucked the last decade. And I had a nice like cinematic movie-esque moment yesterday where it's my first Father's Day and it's a wonderful day. My dad and my middle brother, we went out, we played the course that we grew up on, and it was a nice distraction because I think if I were sitting in front of the TV, I don't really know what I would have done. So I had the tournament on my phone, and you know, you're actually...
Oh, really? You weren't actually watching this unfold sitting in front of the TV?
Not in front of the TV. And so, well, until we got to whatever. The first hole we watched in front of the TV was 14. And so it's like my reality is having this nice moment with my dad and my brother and having a wonderful day. And then on the like happening over on this subplot is I know exactly, like, I know where this is headed. Like, is Rory going to finally, you know, vanquish the demons and overcome it? And then everyone's focused on the putts. I'm focused on the shots that he hit. And it was very nervy. And I was just brought back to the 2022 Masters where he gets off to the unreal start. And you know Scottie Scheffler's out in front. But he eagles 13, and you're thinking, maybe, maybe, maybe. And then the very next tee shot's just a pull dead left. And that's what happens when he gets nervous. And he started missing left, left, left. And I'm like, oh, boy. Oh, boy. It's sinking in. And then the first putt, when you yank it and you hit it that hard and it doesn't go in, that was just when I knew it's like, this is, he's not going to steer this in.
I mean, here's the truth. I feel empathy, which is weird. The guy has how much money?
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Hundreds of millions of dollars. You just watch him walking across the golf course. He's a striking, you know, he's fit, he's, you know, good looking. He's got hundreds of million dollars. I feel empathy for him, though. I really do. And I was rooting for him. Maybe not to the extent you were, but because there's nothing to explain this other than, like, there you can blow a lead and then not be obviously a choke.
Sure.
Honestly, like, the Memphis Tigers losing to Kansas, Mario Chalmers hitting that shot, like, they should have fouled him or whatever else. I think you can go back to the foul shots and say that was a choke. A choke is when the nerves get into your head and prevent you from doing what you just would normally do. Right?
Yeah, I mean, to me,
that's a choke.
To me, this is like,
and this is just 100%. The guy is 496 out of 496 inside 3 feet. And you could just imagine the train rushing through his head. You know, like,
it's
that
the putt
moment.
On 16. I know everyone's focused.
No, it's the one on 16. It's the one on 16, 100%. Like, the one on 16.
Because I think the one on 16 led to the one on 18.
Yeah.
If you pull it dead left, what usually happens on the next big putt that you have?
But on
you're
going to
shove it dead right.
He literally just.
He's lucky it hit the hole. If it doesn't hit the hole, it's like 6 feet high. It almost missed the hole.
And so then, I mean, there's nothing to say other than he choked. He choked. It wasn't.
Yeah.
He pressed it.
Yeah.
He doesn't. It was the pressure made him miss a putt, which is the definition of choking. I don't think Scott Norwood choked. I think he missed a 47-yard field goal in that Super Bowl. Right?
I think Tyler Bass choked.
Tyler Bass choked. Yeah. That would have tied. But yeah. But there are losses that are not chokes, even if they look like, oh, you had that, you blew it, whatever else. All you had to, like, this was 100%. There's nothing to say other than it was his brain melting.
Yes.
Which is the definition of a choke. So I feel empathy for him over that. He then leaves without talking to the media. And listen, I don't care at some level. Like, and I understand a lot of you out there, like, who cares if he doesn't? You hate the media anyway. I get that, right? Whatever. It is true. There is a way, and as Scott Van Pelt said this last night, I think the way he phrased it is you just have to. If you don't, you're putting yourself in line for criticizing. You're putting yourself in a line to be criticized for that too. You are. Know what you look like? A choker and a sore loser.
Yes.
And that's just what you look like. You look like a choker, which is indisputable, and a sore loser. Now, again, I have some empathy. The guy is just unraveled. But Greg Norman talked to the media.
Uh-huh.
Phil Mickelson talked to the media. It's a bad look. It just is. I don't care, and I understand it, and I have empathy for it, and I guess the last thing you would want to do, but it opens yourself up to now being criticized as a choker. And when I talk about how you will be remembered, that is part of how you will be remembered, for walking off without talking afterwards. And it has become that much more important that he now does ultimately win another major, because then at least you've got the comeback story.
Yeah, I mean, like, if I'm trying to take positive, it's like, well, his previous biggest choke job was the 2011 Masters. I mean, people forget, like, he, even when he was standing on 10T, he still had the lead. And if he just plays decent on the back nine, he was probably going to win. he hooks it 7 miles left on 10, and then that's all she wrote. He came back and won the next major.
So will he win another major?
I still say yes, because I think the thing that's encouraging to me is some of
Scottie Scheffler's, I mean, suddenly mortal.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that clearly helps. But, like, to me, the bigger difference is the 10 years that we've gone since majors, there's really only been a handful where I've even felt like he really had a shot.
It is interesting because he's had 21 top 10 finishes.
Right, but it's been a lot of, like, it's been a lot of, hey, let's go fire a low one on Sunday and backdoor and let's make some cash. It's been a lot of that. This is different to me than St. Andrews was 2 years ago, because Cam Smith, like, really did go out and get it. Like, he played an unbelievable round, and Rory thought, all I have to do is I'm four up on everybody else. If I beat Victor Hovland, I'm going to win. He got quickly ahead of Hovland. He was focused on that. Cam Smith went out and earned it. Last year, same thing. Like, I felt like Wyndham Clark went out and earned it. This one was, you had control. If you just get it to the house, honestly, he probably could have gotten it to the house at 7-under, and I think he was going to win. And he couldn't get it to the house, even at 6-under. And so you had control of the tournament, and you could not finish it. That's the it's the first one I've felt like that yet. But the reason why I do also feel like he's probably going to win one of these is you do realize, man, he's still really good.
Right.
And he's now starting to give himself more realistic chances. And eventually kind of the numbers fall your way.
Well, I hope he does. Bryson DeChambeau wins.
I mean, it's gutty.
Gutty, tremendous shot, obviously out of the bunker.
I think the whole day was gutty, because when everyone is asking me, the worst part about yesterday was I actually had a good feeling about Rory going into the day. And the biggest reason I had a good feeling about Rory going into the day is usually in the course of a 4-day tournament, the guys that are at the top,
right,
they're going to play three good rounds,
right,
and then they're going to have one scratchy round, and what's going to happen? And Bryson had not really had that scratchy round yet. And we saw yesterday, he was really scratchy, but he just kind of figured it out. He kept gutting it out, and it was
He missed a putt of his own. And
yes,
if Rory hadn't done what he did, we wouldn't be here with him.
Right.
It is the fact that he is now, here's the truth. Because on the earlier show, they were asking, can you think of an athlete who has gone from villain to popular? You know, like, we see him go the other way. Like, Aaron Rodgers was once, I don't know, you know, whatever, and now he's gone. But we see him go the other way. The truth of the matter is, DeChambeau, even when he was unpopular, was not necessarily unpopular with the gallery.
No, he still had his fans.
Yeah, he still had his fans.
He was more popular, like, with other golfers.
When he was here for whatever the event was during COVID, and he was kind of a jackass, do you remember that?
Yep.
Like, he was unpopular with the media. He was unpopular with other golfers, but he still had his fans. So I don't think it's a 180 here. But to see him as popular as he was, as an engaged with the fans as he has been,
I mean, you have to go back historically, but Jack Nicklaus was a lot like this.
Oh, you're right. Jack Nicklaus was totally unpopular.
Taking
down Palmer.
And Palmer was the guy.
You're 100%
right. Comes Fat Jack, this fat guy that's kind of smug.
Example.
And, you know, he's talk like this.
Well, even Tiger, honestly.
Sure.
Even Tiger. Tiger always had a massive fan base, but he had people who would actively root against him for the same reason that people actively root against Caitlin Clark.
Yes.
Right. So I think you're right. So that's interesting. That's, as people age, you see a softening of attitude towards them. Maybe even, like, I bet Jimmy Connors, once upon a time, probably the same trajectory. Came in, he was McEnroe, like, they all probably did. By the end, they've matured. We appreciate their greatness. And, you know, you can already start to imagine a little bit of a reminiscing over there, you know, when era is over. I think you're right. So that is not as uncommon
The thing about Bryson is, I think for a lot of players, like Dustin in particular, although how much is Dustin's struggles now, Father Time versus going and playing, you know, a hit and giggle on Liv. But Liv has clearly worked for Bryson. It is more sheltered, and so he can be more protective of his image. It's allowed him to do the YouTube stuff that has been very popular, And the biggest thing that you realize with Bryson is Bryson in small doses is the best version of Bryson. And you're now getting him four times a year, and dude has showed up so far. Of the big tournaments, he showed up in all three. And it's allowed him to kind of, you know, he's gone through other stuff too. He's gotten a little older, and he's realizing, like, hey, some of the way I was presenting myself wasn't great. But so he's made some changes there. But really I think the biggest thing is you realize, like, we like to watch him compete, but maybe we don't need to watch him week after week after week.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Okay. Any other thoughts on...
It was good to have a U.S. Open again. We finally had a U.S. Open. We've been having some PGA championships disguised
as
U.S. Open.
Masquerading as...
I mean, it was the cart... That's... I don't think... Golfers will never understand it because they're just so like, it's unfair. It's like, part of the U.S. Open test is the fact that it is a little bit unfair. And the fact that the golf course gets a little out of control. But part of it is the mental test. And can you deal with this? And, like, you should feel kind of exhausted coming off the golf course. And, like, that's what I thought was so impressive about Bryson. What an absolute grind that was. And then you see the pure euphoria of recognizing that I survived that and I won. And it was good to finally have that again, because I think that style of golf, you don't want it week in, week out, but once a year you want to see it, and it's unbelievable television.
All right, other news before we get to, again, we got Dan Devine in the next segment, Chris Harrington after that. And then, of course, we do have to talk about the closing of the Cheesecake Factory, Jeffrey.
R.I.P.
The most read story of the Daily Memphian from over the weekend is the closing of the Cheesecake Factory. We will get to that. We did have news from the Daily Memphian. Tim Buckley and John Martin had the story that there will be Zoom interviews this week for candidates for the athletic director job. And they identified, this was not an exclusive list. They didn't pretend it was an exhaustive list, but they identified four people who will be identified and said up to six could be interviewed.
And so I think most of these names were on John's original list, right?
Yeah,
that he did like a few months ago.
There were lists of here likely suspects.
Yeah.
But now we know the exclusive part of this one was that we know these guys are interviewing. So these are four candidates who are interviewing. Mark Allnutt, who is who's at the University of Buffalo, of course, was here once upon a time. So Ed Allnutt is one. Ryan Alpert, who is at the University of Tennessee, was also here once upon a time. We have Kevin White and Edward Scott. Kevin White is the deputy AD at Virginia. Virginia is Ed Scott, and Clemson is Kevin White. Kevin White from Clemson and Ed Scott from Virginia. I also believe that Jeff Crane, who is the interim, will get a interview, probably. That's unclear exactly. And he's certainly interested in the job. And then my understanding is there is at least one more candidate out there who has not been identified. So
I love a mystery candidate.
So it's interesting because your former co-host in the afternoon wrote a controversial column once upon a time, Jeffrey, saying that the next athletic director at the University of Memphis should be African-American.
Mm-hmm.
And three of these candidates are. Ryan Alpert is not. I don't know how much that plays into it, but it does feel like we are getting to a it feels like we're getting down to the moment here, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it feels like, I don't know, this should be wrapped up probably in a month at the longest.
Right, yeah. What do you think of the job?
That's such a complicated question. It's like, what do you think of college athletics? I mean, I think the advantages of this job is it is a sports place that is committed, but the problem is, what is its place moving forward?
Yeah, it's interesting. So when you ask that first question, what do you think about college athletics? anyone who is interviewing for this job is immersed in college athletics.
Yeah.
So they're not choosing between this or working for FedEx.
Sure.
Right? You know what I mean? This is the world they've chosen, and so they are trying to make their way in this world. I do think it's particularly complicated right now looking at Memphis. Because you once knew what Memphis was. For good or for bad or whatever else, you knew what Memphis was. Now you know what Memphis aspires to be.
Right.
You know what Memphis might become on the downside. In a sense, it's a really... Listen, here's some of the strength of the job. It's a great job. Because people in Memphis care, right?
Yep.
People in Memphis care. You immediately have everybody's attention. You got a new stadium online. You got FedEx Forum online. You've got money from Fred Smith from FedEx
and
for the NIL stuff. So you're competitive there. You're very clearly outside of the Power Five, one of the premier athletic programs that might actually, depending on how you imagine it, get into the Power Five at some point. And so there's a lot of upsides here. It's also true, though, like if you're the AD at Rice,
or pick
a group of five school that doesn't think it should be Louisville or Cincinnati. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
There is an additional pressure that comes along with being that the AD at a place that if you don't, that aspires to more. Like,
yes.
Memphis aspires to compete for national championships in basketball. That's just true. They do. Memphis aspires to be in the Power Five. So if you are taking this job, is it disappointing if you don't do those things? And I think it's a tricky job. A lot of strengths, and the ambition is good on the one hand, but the ambition is also sets a higher bar for what you have to achieve. And if you don't think you can clear that bar, given the resources and the realities, then it becomes a real challenge.
Well, I think the two biggest complications that I would imagine candidates are thinking about is, number one, you can aspire to be a part of the big boys or the big table, however you want to phrase it, all you want. But in the end, it's not really like, if you do this, if you accomplish these things, then therefore you're in.
Yeah.
There's
no box you can check.
Correct. Now, you have to also do those things to present yourself so that if the time does come for you to have your number called, you're ready to go. But the question is, for me, realistically, is, okay, when we next have realignment, which is obviously coming at some point, is it going to be more teams move up again, or is it going to be a contraction? And what is likely is probably, even if it's a contraction, there's still going to be some places that need to find a home, and that home is going to be better than wherever you are right now.
I guess my question is, would you rather be a couple things. Would you rather be number two or number three at Tennessee, right?
Yes.
We've seen coaches who would rather be defensive coordinators at Power Five schools than head coaches, you know, at a group of five school. And so are you going to see – here's the truth, though. The way that you become an AD at a – just look at Laird Veach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way you become a Power Five AD still seems to be an AD somewhere, do a good job, and then be elevated. What was he? He was number two or number three or something at Florida, comes to Memphis, is perceived to do a good job, and all of a sudden he's a AD at Missouri. And so I do think that's still the path, right? Or still a perceived path to getting to a Power Five job. I just think, and then of course, you've got football that has momentum.
Yep.
And then you got basketball that's in the midst of some struggles.
Correct. And then the second complication would be, okay, what if this basketball season doesn't go well?
Yes, that is clearly a second complication. And we'll talk about that another time.
Yes.
But that's a tricky one. There's no question about that. Final thing I want to talk about before we get to Dan Devine, is the latest Caitlin Clark thing. This time, Angel Reese, a hard foul, upgraded to a flagrant. And, of course, the whole world, you know, pays attention to it. This was just a hard foul, wasn't it? I mean, it was just... Like, this literally would not, if it were anyone but Caitlin Clark, we would not be talking about it.
Well, and their history.
And their history. And I think that's true. And their history. It's interesting because I had no problems with the foul itself. I mean, it's a hard foul, right? I didn't.
Yeah.
But what's interesting, I found what interesting was Angel Reese after the game. She said two things. She said some people get a special whistle. And she said, y'all are going to watch this clip 20 times. You know, whatever. She's kind of, you know, sighed and said, y'all are going to watch this clip over and over. Both of those things are reality. Like I don't know if the first one's a reality, but the second one's certainly a reality.
I didn't really feel like that was a special whistle. But
I didn't know. That was not a special whistle. I don't know that she was referring to that call generally when it came to the special whistle. Anyone would have sold that and should have. But it does go to, like, y'all are going to watch. It does underline what I've said all along. Fair or not, players resent Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, to say that players resent Caitlin Clark is not.
It would be having your head in the sand.
Yeah, it's not calling them out for being. It's just stating a reality, and then you can get into why they resent Caitlin Clark. And let's be honest, it has nothing to do with Caitlin Clark.
Yes,
right. It has nothing to do with Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark was criticized for the way she handled the questions about, you know, whether she should say something about some of her fans who are racist, whatever, who have weaponized her as a cudgel or whatever. And you know what she did? She didn't dig in her heels. Like, a lot of people in defense of Caitlin Clark were digging in their heels. They were saying she shouldn't have to, you know, say. And you know what Caitlin Clark did? She said, you know what, I hope my name isn't weaponized in the against other players. Other players deserve all the credit in the world. Like, none of this is about Caitlin Clark. It's just all about the world.
Yes.
Right? It's all about the world. It's all about race. It's all about all of that.
Yes.
And it's played out over and over and over and over again, and was also this past weekend. All right. We got Dan Devine coming up next. Then we got Chris Harrington after that. I will tell you, in the meantime, if you want something framed from your first Father's Day, picture from your first Father's Day, I would take that photo into the frame corner, and I'd say, can you make this look beautiful? Because that's what they do at the frame corner. You can walk on in and buy a frame if you like, but they specialize in custom framing, and they do an absolutely magnificent job, whether it's a photo, whether it's memorabilia, whether it's a collection of photos, whether it's fishing lures. They do that too. They can frame anything and make it look stunning and preserve memories forever. It's Frame Corner, framecornermemphis.com, 5035 Park Avenue. Dan Devine, when we return, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
No one knows the importance of a great assist more than Lowe's and Leo Messi. That's why we've teamed up to give MVP's Pro Rewards members 10 times the points when Messi makes an assist during CONMEBOL Copa America USA 2024. Activate this offer starting June 20th. So when Messi assists, you score. Shop the day after an assist to earn those extra points. Not an MVP's Pro Rewards member? Join today.
Every business faces challenges, but complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping shouldn't be one of them.
With USPS Ground Advantage from the United States Postal Service, you can avoid all the noise.
No more unexpected surcharges, hidden fees, or complex rate structures.
It's just easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. Tune your business's frequency to success and turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
It's Rob Joyner at James Davis, and summer weather is in full swing and just in time to take advantage of our summer clearance sale at 30 to 70% off. Knit shirts, shorts, denim, 5-pocket pants for the office, golf course. We are clearing out all our spring-summer sport coats, and if your suits are tired and out of style, now is the time. Our Our Paul Battinelli suits regularly $650 each are two suits for $895. James Davis at Laurelwood Shopping Center at Poplar and Perkins. We're on Instagram or jamesdavisstore.com.
Life is fast and furious. Sometimes you need a boost. The Shot Nurse can help with Lipo B12 injections, increase energy, improve mood and sleep. It even helps with allergies. Or boost your immune system with our Tri-Immune Booster, packed with vitamin C and zinc. It gives your body a head start at fighting off illness. With three locations throughout the Mid-South, we can get you in and out quickly. The Shot Nurse is your wise choice.
Protection you need with a personal touch. The Shot Nurse.
It's the first day of the first grade, and she found a new best friend. It's a laid-back Sunday afternoon you wish would never end.
The homemade taste of Bluebell and good friends gathered round. The good old days are being made right now.
Bluebell is known for flavors that push the boundaries of taste. Our oatmeal cream pie ice cream is an oatmeal flavored ice cream with hints of brown sugar mixed with soft oatmeal cookies and a vanilla icing swirl. We've set the bar sky high for deliciousness.
The good old days are being made right now.
The good old days are being made right now.
Look for Bluebell ice cream at all area Walgreens stores and all area Super Low supermarket stores.
Get ready, because the Gossip Mitsubishi Motors Summer Sales Event is on, and now is the best time to buy. You want 43 MPG Highway? We Gossip in 2024 Mitsubishi Mirage. $18,960 or $279 a month. 2024 Mitsubishi Outlander Sport. We Gossip $27,350 or $399 per month. And your summer adventure starts with 2024 Mitsubishi Outlander SE. We Gossip $29,865 or $449 a month. Plus, every Gossip Mitsubishi comes with Mitsubishi's 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain limited warranty. That's Gossip Mitsubishi. 1870 Covington Pike, online 24-7 at memphismitsubishi.com.
If you want it, we got it at Gossip Motor Cars.
Mirage RHFO 9083, MSRP 19460, Sport RU 0110, 764, MSRP 28070, Outlander RZO 53896, MSRP 30895, PF 695, acquisition fee 595, 15 cents excess mileage, excludes tax, title, and license. See dealer for complete details. Offer valid to end of the month with approved credit, dealer stock only.
The times, they are a-changing. Bob Dylan's song is even more meaningful today in the real estate industry. This is Sheldon Rosengarten with Mark's Benstorff Realtors. And in the months to come, if you decide to sell your home, you better have a knowledgeable agent to guide you through the changes that are taking place. As I tell people, it's not that you don't know the answers, you don't know the questions. So, if you or someone you know is thinking of selling, talk to 2 to 3 experienced real estate brokers to guide you through the changes, but make sure that I am one of them. I have a highly successful strategic marketing program that can mean the difference in when you sell and what you make. We're also affiliated with leading real estate companies of the world, a relocation network that means added exposure for your home from buyers moving into the Memphis area. Find out why people often say that when you want the job done, all shell done. You can reach me at 483-0546 or memphisrelocate.com. That's memphisrelocate.com or 483-0546.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you need bold banners to boost your business, but you're on a budget, think Staples. Because now at Staples, you can save up to $50 on your print purchase. From posters and flyers to signs and menus, Staples can print anything you need to move your business forward. And with Staples Print Perfect Guarantee, it's done right or it's printed again free. Plus, same-day service is available on hundreds of items if you order by noon. Get it printed right at Staples. And now get up to $50 off your print purchase. And 7-6, visit staples.com/print for details.
Your window into affordable luxury is Pella Windows and Doors of Memphis.
At Pella, we offer quality replacement windows at any budget.
I can't believe the price of my new windows. They were so affordable.
If I knew I could afford windows and doors as gorgeous as these, I would have chosen Pella Windows and Doors in Memphis years ago.
Right now, save 25% on your entire project or get 50% off installation.
The highest quality, the greatest value.
Choose Pella Windows and Doors of Memphis, your window into affordable luxury.
Jeff's guests appear on the Frame Corner phone lines. Frame Corner, with expert custom and do-it-yourself framing since 1975 on Park Avenue in East Memphis. Now, back to the Jeff Calkins Show, live from the Genesis Memphis Covington Pike Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Dan Devine. Dan writes for Yahoo about the NBA. The podcast is No Cap Room. You can find it wherever you listen to your podcasts and on Twitter or X at YourManDevine. For Yahoo, he wrote a piece, 2024 NBA Finals. Celtics stunned in lopsided loss to Mavericks in Game 4. What happened? I like the simplicity of that, the blunt simplicity. So I will ask you, Dan, what happened?
I think to some degree that's a human nature loss. You know, you go up 3-0 and you realize that in the 156 prior times that's happened, the team that got that lead won the series. So you got some wiggle room. And maybe, you know, like one thing that struck me, I think it was at the shoot-around the morning before. You know, not everybody talks at shoot-around. The Celtics dutifully sent Sam Hauser out to talk at shoot-around. And they asked, you know, the general question was like, what's the vibe of the team? And he was like kind of like anxious, wish we could play right now. And that could mean two things, right? That could mean, you know, yeah, we're excited, we're ready for the challenge, and another thing could be like, feels kind of weird to be this close to a title. We just kind of want to get this over with. And I think they played a little bit like that. Missed shots, then dovetail into Dallas getting some positive offense, like some chances to attack in transition, not against that set Celtics defense. And then Joe Mazzulla is very fond of saying, you know, the two ends of the floor are connected. And it really felt like that. Bad start offensively leads to bad start defensively, gets Luka out on a roll after he had that tough end to Game 3, gets Kyrie on a roll. A couple of the other guys get shots to fall finally, which had not happened at all really through the first three games of the series. And Dallas is just able to sort of play downhill from there, and the Celtics never got any traction. So that that Mazzulla wound up pulling his starters with, I think, 3:20 to go in the third quarter. That stood out. Jason Kidd even said, and, you know, Jason Kidd's a big fan of tweaking everybody, said, you know, they let go of the rope pretty early. But the game was over well before that. And so that Boston just felt like they never even got into the game. Dallas threw the haymaker they needed to, and now we see if Boston can shake it off for Game 4.
It's interesting. Human nature is...
Game 5, rather.
Human nature is peculiar because you could have imagined, like, it's also human nature to not want to get on the plane, go back to Boston to lose a series that you're going to lose anyway. Like, there's that. Which human nature is going to prevail? The human nature that says, tells the Mavs, let's just mail this one in and go to get on our way to a vacation? Or the human nature that tells the Celtics, we don't have to worry about this one because we're not going to lose this series anyway? I do wonder... We know the stat about no one's ever come back from 3-0. I wonder if when teams go up 3-0, do more close out or do more lose? Like, which human nature is stronger there? I think it's framed a little bit by how the game starts, though, as you point out. Like, at that point, it kicks in and okay, fine. Well, we'll let go of the rope early.
I think so, and I don't have those numbers in front of me, but yeah. I believe it's more often that it does close as opposed to being forced to a Game 5. I might be wrong about that.
Yeah.
But there's been certainly a number of, you know, ones where it goes to a Game 5. I think the rarity is getting further than that. So right. That's really, obviously this is really groundbreaking analysis, Devine. The challenge ahead of Dallas is being able to withstand, you keep that momentum going, continue to build on the good things that they found back in Boston. Top of that list, obviously, is Kyrie Irving being able to shake off the difficult start to the series that he had. Everything Dallas does, like the entire formula of their run through the back quarter of the season, you know, after the trade deadline and after they reshuffled their starting lineup through the Western Conference playoffs, the whole formula is Luka plus Kyrie plus defense. That's the whole thing. And Luka with the exception of the defensive end of the floor and then some, difficulty continuing to produce late in games when he's exhausted and been beat up, Luka's been there, right? That's a consistent 30 a night, basically. The defense has, they've given up a lot of the kinds of shots that Boston wants to shoot, but generally speaking, the terms of engagement here have been what Boston wants, getting up around 40 threes a game, being able to get a lot of shots at the rim, convert the ones that they get at a high level. And it's just been really about, can Dallas hit enough tough twos to hang with Boston's relatively easy threes? A lot of those easy threes, though, went away in Game 4, and that's Dallas's defense was significantly sterner, stiffer. I think a lot of that was they got the athletes on the floor more often. You got Derek Lively into the game earlier for Daniel Gafford. You got Dante Exum and Josh Green in there on the wing. And Jason Kidd just kind of had to say, listen, if we go down, at least we go down playing the way that got us here with the guys who played that way. And Dante Exum and Josh Green stood up. Derek Lively had his best game of the series. If those guys are able to sort of provide a little more force, higher pickup points, more physicality, you're not just going to let you walk into the ball screen. You're going to have to fight for that foot of space. We're not just going to let you crash from the corners and get the offensive rebound. We're going to put a body on you, box out, be able to control the ball, and then get out the other way. We're not just going to concede on the offensive left on the other end. Derek Lively had 7 offensive rebounds in that game. I believe that's the most any Celtics opponent has had this entire postseason, like more than anybody in the first 3 series put on them. So we're going to make you earn it. And maybe that's just the death rattle, right? The last gasp of, we're doing this out of a point of pride to not get swept. Boston let go of the rope, as we mentioned, and then now you have our full and undivided attention back at home. But that formula for Dallas has been good enough to beat an awful lot of good teams and to put up a winning percentage and a net rating and all those sorts of things that mark them in the last 35 or 40 games they've played as one of the elite teams in the league. If you do that again, you get Luka with one of those performances again, you get Kyrie off the schneid in Boston again, things can get interesting quick. The odds are against it. But stranger things have happened. Boston knows very well. They went down 0-3 last year and then forced a Game 7. That thing can happen if you're not too careful.
The show that precedes ours, the national show on ESPN, they were being critical of Jason Tatum, who was interviewed yesterday and said, listen, of course we want to win Game 5, but we don't have to. And I paraphrase. But he said, there are other games after that. If we don't win, of course we want to win. We want to win this one. And I'll be honest. Like, I think I don't really take much. In the end, the way you assemble the words, I don't think it means he doesn't want to, is nonchalant about Game 5. Do you attach any particular scrutiny? Maybe if they lose again, every word at that point will feel the pressure will be descending upon them, and we can analyze every word for how they're reacting to the pressure. I think that's Jason Tatum just saying words, because he's got to get to the next game.
The most remarkable thing is, so Jason Tatum, as a devout and studied Mamba mentality adherent, right? Uh-huh. Just kind of keeps doing stuff that makes it so that people can continually criticize him as not having that dog in him. Like, Jason Tatum plays like 2 of the most selfless floor games of his playoff career, and 2 of the most consistent, persistent. Even if I'm not making shots, I'm going to work like hell on the defensive end. I'm going to put my head down and drive to the basket. I'm not settling for the sidesteps, step back jumpers. I'm going to rebound like crazy. I'm guarding centers. He does all of the little nitty gritty hard stuff to win NBA Finals games in games 1 and 2. And all he wants to talk about is that he's not scoring. Then he goes and he scores in the first half of Game 3 to help them get out, or first to withstand Dallas's run and then to get them back towards the lead. Plays great ball in the third quarter, selflessly sort of steps away to give more space for Jaylen Brown to score. And all we talk about is that he didn't actually take the game over, and also the game got a little too close in the fourth quarter. Now we get to this, and it's like he says the truth, the actual thing of we don't literally have to win this next game. We have 3 more chances to get one win, and it's again back to, does he have that dog in him? There's a little bit of maybe he could just Euro step around some rakes. He doesn't have to step on everyone. But I think you're right. I don't think that's indicative of a lack of seriousness. I think the Celtics, generally speaking, have had a uniform attention to detail, commitment, and focus on the execution. The only real blip we've seen was in that Game 3. Even the games that they lost earlier in this postseason, Miami hit like 25 threes in Game 2 of that first-round series. Cleveland got one game off of them where Donovan Mitchell looked like the best player on the floor, and he's capable of doing that. And that's kind of it. Like the Celtics have been really locked in, and achievement oriented this whole time. I would be very surprised if they were not that for Game 5.
Two things I didn't realize. Again, we're talking to Dan Devine. The podcast is No Caprum. You can read his piece on what happened in Game 4. I have tweeted it out. I didn't realize two things. One is I didn't realize that the NBA draft is on Wednesday night instead of Thursday night. That's it got me all confused now. Next week. Sooner the better as far as I can is concerned from the Memphis perspective. But the second thing that I didn't realize is that the new rules are if the Celtics win tonight, you've got teams like Cleveland with Donovan Mitchell and Golden State or Indiana with Pascal Siakam, they can go ahead and start negotiating with their soon-to-be free agents. Are you just going to work right through the evening, right into the morning, the wee hours of the morning? Are we going to start seeing deals tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I also had forgotten about the Wednesday night thing, which was really great because this morning as we're getting the kids ready to get out the door, my wife is like, so what's the schedule for next week? And I was like, brother, I don't even know what the schedule is for today, which always goes over super well. The answer is it's sort of, I could, from a process perspective, I can understand a team saying it feels silly that we don't have the opportunity to negotiate with somebody who's already in-house. We should have the opportunity, like, that should be rights afforded to us as the holder of this player's contract. And I get that. And I think that it's also a way to sort of minimize the tampering concerns because this sort of thing was happening anyway. And you could say, like, hey, come on, man. Like, we already know this guy. We're already talking to him. Like, let us be able to continue to do this. So I get that. I think I would be surprised if there weren't at least a few deals agreed to and a few deals, like, you know, consummated because, you mentioned Siakam. OG Anunoby in New York, although there's been a lot of smoke about OG Anunoby potentially being somebody who would draw a lot of interest on the market, but there's a lot of discussion that's been like the Knicks would not have made that trade if there was not some general understanding of a framework for what it would take to bring him back in the summer. Same thing with Siakam in Indiana, and some of the extensions that you're talking about, whether it's rookie scale guys or players, veteran players who are going to be able to tack 2 or 3 years onto their deal. I would be surprised if some of that work didn't get done over the next week. It does not necessarily give people like me a whole lot of a break, but that is not who the Adam Silver of the world care about, and frankly, I find that disrespectful, but I also understand it. It's another way also to keep the NBA from being, having any sort of week or two off. Like, let's keep the pedal to the metal in terms of news that we can generate and then we can talk about on various platforms. So I get it. I appreciate it broadly in terms of the, like, getting to have a job of it all, but yeah, the no rest for the wicked at this point, exactly. I suppose.
The podcast, No Caprum, you can read him over at Yahoo. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks so much, Jeff. Take care.
That is Dan Devine. Man, Devine. You like Wednesday, Thursday for the draft instead of Thursday, Friday? I think I like Thursday, Friday. But, next week, let's be honest, we've been waiting for the damn draft to get here.
Yeah, right? I mean, I suppose the...
Away we go.
The simple answer would be, I guess, the sooner the better. And it feels like most people don't want to have big television events in the summer on Friday. So
I think Friday night is, yeah. It is interesting also... It feels like the NBA, the NFL draft is Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yep.
So they really couldn't do Wednesday, Thursday, Friday because they need Saturday to be the big day with all these rounds. So they pretty much have to do it Thursday, Friday.
Yep.
Friday's not a TV night, though, right? Is it particularly a TV night?
Not typically.
It doesn't feel like a TV night. And so I get why the NBA would be doing that. Father's Day has come and gone. What'd you get for Father's Day?
So my wife got me some dad shoes, which were hilarious. I loved that. And then I got a couple of cards, and then she found a hat that has a black lab with a red bandana on it, looking like my dog. So that was great.
That's sweet.
And then my mom gave me cash, which was awesome.
Well, I was disappointed because here I am on the radio all the time talking about how all I want
No one got you a call?
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't, I literally, how much more transparent? Like, it's not everyone who has a father who will tell you on the radio exactly what he wants, right?
For sure.
Talk about disrespect.
This isn't even a hint. This was instructions.
It's literally, I said, why, you know, and here's the thing. Here's the thing. Now it's time for dads to take matters into their own hands. It's no more messing around. I actually yesterday.
Go get you something for you.
I'm wearing these shorts that are, they're sort of combination bathing. They're all day. Yeah. They're called all day shorts. And I was literally commented yesterday. I was commenting on how good they looked. And they are all day shorts. And I would recommend you go to O'Call and ask them about their all day shorts. Or I just walk on in there. I was complimented on a shirt I have that Faraday is by Faraday. They do spectacular clothes, incredible people. And if you're a father and you didn't get your wardrobe spruced up the way you needed yesterday, head on in there. Soon. It's hot. My God, it was hot over the weekend.
Good.
It's hot. It's summer.
So happy.
And it is time to get yourself outfitted. We are